This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
David West, man, he really wants to win a ring.
Yeah. He really does.
Kevin Rayfuse.
To be good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzak.
Between Rose, Mello, and Noah, those guys are really well-known players, and that right there kind of gives you the all super team vibe.
Well, if you like that, you're going to love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this!
Let's go!
So they've been happening for weeks, as we know, but the Rio Olympics, the conversation wasn't really about the events like it should have been, even though there's some great things happened. Usain Bolt won some more gold medals, three more, actually. The
He's
USA,
a monster.
He is a monster. That dude is so fast. I feel like that's such a basic analysis of his how fast he is. But, I mean, the guy won the 200-meter by a full body length over everyone.
Yeah, yeah, and then became a meme.
Indeed. The point of this intro, we want to talk about Mr. Ryan Lochte. Ryan Lochte, who, if you don't know, is an American swimmer. He's pretty good. He's probably the second best overall behind the god himself, Michael Phelps. Anyway, so Lochte's won some golds. He and three other American swimmers had said last week that they got robbed in Rio, that someone dressed as police put guns to their head, robbed them, and it was this whole big thing.
Right.
Well, it turns out they actually vandalized a gas station, and they made it all up.
Which is like, why? Like, why?
Because they paid. The security guard came out, made them pay for the damage that they did to the restroom.
Okay.
They dropped the guy $50.
Yeah.
And then they bounced before the cops got there.
Right.
I just don't know. Like, if you paid for the damage you did, why did you make this elaborate story up about being... Why?
Well, I guess there was a whole thing about being out past curfew or something. Like, that was a whole side thing. But even so, it's like... Who... Just don't make up a whole elaborate scheme.
Also, like, Ryan Lochte is 31.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other
side. And in his apology, he was like, oh, well, being out in Brazil sometimes is just scary when you don't know the language. I'm like, you know, no one forced you to go out in Brazil.
The side thing, and I was thinking about this, and I tweeted it the other day, right now would be the perfect time to actually rob Ryan Lochte.
No one would believe him.
No one would believe him. This
Dude,
guy
Ryan
screwed
Lochte,
up.
You should know better to not to trust Ryan Lochte because he's 31 years old and dyed his hair like platinum silver
that's
before
a,
the
That's
Olympics.
A swimmer thing, though.
That's not a swimmer thing.
Oh, see, at my high school, all the swimmers would
right,
do that
you
before
know,
swimming.
No, like my brother swam. They bleached their hair for a match. That's fine. They all did that. But like Ryan Lochte is the only American swimmer who went down there with that hair. Let's not try to justify.
I just don't have as strong a feelings about it. I think the guy's an idiot. It was stupid. It was a misrepresentation. You're also there playing the Olympics. Like, why are you going out partying?
No. Whoa. I don't agree there at all. The Olympic Village is like, that's the time to do it. If you're working in the Olympics, you got to figure these guys are training year round to get to this event every 4 years. When you finally made it to the Olympics and you ran your events, like, you deserve to let off some steam a little bit.
There's a guy that walks around with a massive bag of condoms.
Oh, dude, Tinder.
Yeah, I saw that.
Tinder is crazy. There was an article on 2014 when Tinder was still relatively new, when they had the Winter Olympics in Sochi, and it was just like, I'll put it this way. The Olympic Village is a hive of scum and villainy.
According to Tinder?
According to there are a lot of things that happen there. There are many stories that come out. Speaking of a hive of scum and villainy, you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
If I had a ball, I assume that ball wouldn't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
What happens in Vegas may stay in Vegas, but what happens in New Orleans goes home with you.
Well, what happens in Rio apparently goes home with you, too, so...
Anthony Davis.
No. Kevin Serafin.
Huh. Yeah. God, what happened? Does Kevin Serafin have something that he wants to admit to us right now? Because that's sure what it sounds like.
Also, just a note to anyone listening, what happens in Vegas doesn't always stay in Vegas. If you get married in Vegas, it is legit.
And it
you
will
can't,
follow you.
You can't get an annulment, and you have to get a divorce. you cannot claim I was drunk in Vegas and got married. Just FYI,
wait, hold
that
on.
Whole statement is false.
Wait, hold on. By chance, did this happen to you?
In my early 20s, I married a lesbian in Vegas, and I thought that I could just get an annulment, and I couldn't.
You actually had to go fully divorce.
Full divorce. It took a couple of years. It cost a whole lot of money. You cannot use the "I was drunk and in Vegas" as an excuse to get an annulment.
Okay,
well, I feel like there's a big story behind this.
I feel like we should have a whole episode on this, which will probably happen at some point.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now, if you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
The Olympics are complete. It is official. Serbia is the second best team in the world after being demolished by the United States in a completely lopsided 30-point blowout. Carmelo Anthony has become the first player ever to win 3 gold medals in the Olympics and has announced that this was his last run. Also, it was the last run for Coach K, who has similar accolades on the coaching side. From here on out, Greg Popovich is going to be coaching the Olympic team. But the real game of the weekend was for the bronze medal between Spain and Australia. Australia led by 1 point with 5.9 seconds left on the clock when Sergio Rodriguez was, quote, fouled, hitting both free throws, giving Spain the go-ahead win. And on the women's side, the women's U.S. team won their 6th consecutive gold with a 101-72 point rout over Spain. They had Deladon coming off the bench, though. It just isn't a fair fight. The Milwaukee Bucks have signed Nate Walters after a strong summer league showing with the Pacers. Walters played overseas last season, and if you have an extra $12 million, you can buy Chris Paul's Bel Air 11-bedroom mansion he bought from Avril Lavigne a few years ago, and it looks like JJ Hickson is leaving the NBA to go play in China. He's in the closing stages of contract negotiations, and if you happen to go to a Warriors game this season and find a Stephen Curry mouthguard, apparently those are selling online for more than $3,000. Just ask the random fan who sold his for $3,190 in an online auction. And if you haven't had a chance yet, go ahead and give us a like on Facebook at Drive and a Dish NBA.
Something.
We wanted to take a second to talk to you guys about Loot Crate, and I wanted to point out, when we first started talking about Loot Crate, not many people really knew who they were, but I just saw a commercial for them, which has got to point out, these guys are doing awesome, and a lot of people are buying into this product. What Loot Crate is, it's a bunch of collectibles, apparel, your favorite pop culture franchises. It delivers to you at your door every single month, between 6 to 8 items that are licensed gear and one-of-a-kind unique items. You have until the 19th of each month to buy the box for that month. Now, what you can do with us is you can go to lootcrate.com/driveanddish and enter the code driveanddish. You'll save 10% off any new subscription. It'll give you toys that you can give your kids. For example, last month was anti-hero. You know, everyone was buying into the Suicide Squad stuff. They had Harley Quinn. They had Hellboy, Kill Bill, Archer. All that kind of stuff could have been shipped to you. You missed out on that box, but you don't have to miss out on the next box. So go to Drive and Dish podcast.com, look under the sponsors tab, and find out how you can get a part of Loot Crate with a 10% off from us. Over the summer, we've been doing this cool new segment where we're highlighting other podcasts, other NBA podcasts that you may be interested in or may not have heard of, because, you know, we're trying to spread the love and get the names of some of the smaller podcasts that maybe you guys don't know about or haven't really thought about looking into, and we'll just give you a little quick summary of what it's about and why you should check them out.
Yeah, so this week we got the Fast Break Breakfast. They're part of the Hardwood Paroxysm Network. Anyway, Fast Break Breakfast is a podcast for serious NBA fans that is incredibly not serious. If you watch League Pass every night but aren't listening to Fast Break Breakfast, you're missing out. Fast Break Breakfast is what happens when you get two musicians and a comic who are overeducated, underemployed, but share an obsession about the NBA, 90s movies, and conspiracy theories. Join the party, and you soon too will be talking about your steak and eggs best thing or arguing who deserves the shameful International Stackhouse of Pancakes trophy. That's such a great name. So make sure you listen and subscribe to Fast Break Breakfast, a podcast for serious NBA fans that is incredibly not serious.
The Fast Break Breakfast is the one podcast that I feel like anybody that listens to us would really enjoy, because
they don't take it serious.
Well, they're so much like us in their delivery and their content and their chemistry and the amount that they are bringing in, you know, some sort of humor, comedic relief into the podcast. They're really, really good. And if you enjoy us, I really think you'd enjoy the Fast Break Breakfast.
Overeducated and underemployed has just hit us to a T.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
I'm not underemployed. I'm fully employed. Well, I just don't make any money.
Right. I don't know about the educated part on my side. It's like I'm probably still also undereducated.
So check them out. Fast Break Breakfast. They're on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere that you get podcasts from.
And you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzart. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. So something that's happened around the league this week, they are in advanced talks, so it's not 100% official yet. We don't want to give this to you guys as if it's breaking news, but Jason Terry looks like he's headed to Milwaukee.
What are your thoughts on that? Are you cool with it? Like, I mean, I get it because they're like a younger team, so it kind of brings a vet in there. You know, he's got a little bit of that scoring punch, but how much are they really going to expect from him, I guess?
I think with Jason Terry, he had mentioned that he wanted to be a coach. He's being reunited with Jason Kidd.
Yes.
And I think that this right here might be a move to have him come play with the Bucks, and I do that in air quotes, because he's 39 years old. He'll probably be nothing more than a locker room presence at this point. And then next year, retiring and being added to the coaching staff is sort of what I'm taking out of this entire move.
Well, it's like KG with Minnesota. Like, that's kind of the role that I'm expecting Jason Terry to play here. And we know with Milwaukee, it's such a young core. I mean, you look at the guys between Giannis, between Jabari Parker, and all these other assets that they've been building up on their team. You need that veteran guy almost. I've learned my lesson from the process.
38, by the way.
38,
yeah.
You know, people really seem to forget about Jabari Parker because of his rookie season.
Well, and the injury.
And because he was injured, and people just kind of forgot about the kid. But he's a really talented player.
Well, it's because there's just so many great rookies that have come into the league. And if you're not seeing him play, I mean, it's a guy, obviously not to the extent of Jabari Parker, but a guy like Dante Exum, for example, in Utah. People were, I had somebody ask me the other day, they're like, oh my God, I just realized, why isn't Exum playing for Australia? I forgot he was a thing.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, Parker last year, I mean, averaged 14 points, about 78 free throw percentage. His rookie season, though. Right. He only played, 25 games his first year? So.
Right, so basically his rookie season, averaging 15 points, 14 points a game. That's
50% field goal percentage? Mm-hmm. I'm excited for him to have another year under his belt, for sure.
And you know who else is excited? New Orleans, now that they are getting their third All-Star game.
And I would just like to point out, and I pointed this out on the news in our last episode, that week or that weekend is the first weekend of Mardi Gras. New Orleans is going to be outrageous.
Oh God! We now cannot afford a place to stay, even if we went and went in.
No, it's real funny because Tim said earlier, or a few weeks ago, when Charlotte looked like they were losing it and that it was going to go to New Orleans, because the rumors for New Orleans have been around in a while. Also, Tim has a Renew Orleans shirt on right now. Just kind of, nobody can really see that, but it's kind of fitting for today.
Yeah.
But so we talked about it. We're like, oh yeah, you know, we got to go out to the All-Star game. New Orleans is not that far from Jacksonville. It's about 8 hours away. One of those up and down type flights. And I was looking at the hotels prior to the announcement, and then I made the announcement, and there was a Marriott, for example, and it went from $400 a night maybe, which, you know, for three people is not too bad, but and then it's now up to $2,000 a night.
No. That's painful. We That's like a radio. Gut punch. We could try to go there and get someone to pay us to go there.
I don't know.
Even if they paid us to go there, we couldn't afford the room.
Dude, I don't know.
I'm saying. They'll pay everything.
Yo, and I'm not staying at a Days Inn. It's not happening.
You know all those players are going to be down on Bourbon Street and Magazine Street. Like, oh my gosh.
It would be a lot of fun. Yeah. But we now, even if given free tickets, could not afford to stay.
I'll stay up all night. I don't care. I'll straight up stay up all night.
Just three straight days?
Yeah.
We'll just find a corner and we'll take turns sleeping in the corner of the street or something.
It'll be like Breaking Bad, except we won't be making the mess.
We just need 5-minute power naps. One of us will go into the corner of the stadium. You'll park it on a stall somewhere in the bathroom. Just lock the door. Get a good 10-minute nap and get back out. Rotate.
So we're doing something that I'm really excited about on today's episode. And that the nice thing about the summer is we can kind of get away from the news and get away from the specific specificities, I guess I should say, of what teams are going up and what teams are going down and blah, blah, blah. And we can get into some more fun basketball debate.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do two things on today's episode.
Both debatable topics.
Yes. One is redrafting the 2013 draft, which I'm most excited about. But what we're going to do first is we're going to look at the Eastern Conference and we're going to look at the Western Conference, and we're going to take one team that made it in the playoffs last year that we think won't this year, mm-hmm. and one team that didn't make the playoffs last year that will move into the playoffs this coming season.
Okay. And also, before we get into that, just looking at the Celtics, I wanted to bring this up. National TV appearances, they in 2014-2015 had one. 2015-2016 had seven, and next year have 22.
The Sixers went from 0 to 3.
Yeah.
And Brett Brown said that's because the, like, he took it as a great compliment to how far the Sixers have come.
Yeah.
No.
And I was like, they got three.
Well, but hey, three's better than zero.
Well, it's just, it's Ben Simmons adds the instant legitimacy, is that what people realize. But it's just all in all, like, people should be looking at the process and be going, hey, Hinkie was right about a lot of this. Dario Saric is coming over. We have, Embiid looks like he's going to play in the preseason. You know, Ben Simmons, we got the number one pick that we so long desired. Like, look, y'all can hate on Hinkie all you want, but I think all the Hinkie haters are going to look really stupid in about 2 years.
But I still just think it's funny that he was so adamant about how far the Sixers have come because you guys got three.
We're talking teams that are going to be in the playoffs or out of the playoffs.
You guys want to start the West?
Probably, that makes sense. So I guess, Tim, you came up with this segment. Set it off.
The West was hard because the West, you take a look at all the teams, and I really felt like the East was hard too, honestly.
I felt the East was way harder than the West.
And the West, the one team I'm going to take out is the Mavericks. Obviously, they lost Parsons, they lost Felton, they lost Villanueva, they lost David Lee, and they brought Barnes, Andrew Bogut, Seth Curry, Quincy Acey. You look at them last year, and points allowed 102, points scored 102. They were 26th in three-point percentage while they attempt the fifth most three-point shots. I do think that they're going to see an improved three-point shooting, though. They lost Felton, they lost Villanueva, who I think shot around 180 three-point field goal attempts for him. Mm-hmm. And both of those players are like 25 percentile shooters. And then they brought in Seth Curry and Harrison Barnes, who both shoot 40%. You have a starting lineup of Deron Williams, Wesley Matthews, Harrison Barnes, Dirk, and Bogut. But I just, if you look at them last year, they were the only team that made it into the playoffs with the same points allowed as the points scored. And if you look at the other teams that didn't make the playoffs, like specifically the Jazz had a high, they scored more points than they allowed. And I mean, frankly, the Jazz were a better team than the Mavericks. So I see the Mavericks getting out.
Yeah, I can see. I mean, I agree Utah's in. I feel like, we've been saying this for a few years, but I feel like everybody can universally agree that we think that Utah is getting into the playoffs this year.
Well, they should have been in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
They lost to, like, the Lakers in
that
last game.
They lost some dumb games right at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't close. I mean, Memphis was able to squeak by with all the injuries. But, you know, it was funny. I almost went with Dallas, too, because I
well, they're the obvious choice.
Yeah,
right.
It's such the
obvious choice, and I feel like with the West, it was so easy, but I actually backed off here and went with Houston, only because I don't know why. I have this irrational belief in Rick Carlisle to coach mediocre teams into the playoffs, because I think he's done it for the last 4 years. So I went with Houston. Their big offseason acquisition is Ryan Anderson. I just think this team is going to be a defensive black hole. I don't really love their point guard depth. I do think Harden's going to bounce back and have a really great year. I just don't really know beyond Harden if they have enough to get them in an increasingly competitive West.
Mm-hmm.
I think Utah jumps Houston, and I just, between Houston and Dallas, I think those two are going to be fighting for that last seed, because I think Memphis just being healthy alone makes them better. Plus, they get Parsons, which is something that if you listen to my interview with Joe Mullinax last week, you know that I'm really high on. So I'm going with Houston just to switch it up from Dallas. That's more my belief in Rick Carlisle as the coach than anything.
No, I can completely. I almost had the Rockets too. The Rockets have a superstar in James Harden.
Yeah.
And for everything that all the harp that I give on James Harden, I still just think he's going to get the team into the playoffs. But to your point, Kevin, can Rick Carlisle coach a mediocre team into the playoffs. Well, he's done it every other day.
Well, and I think Dallas is just deeper. I mean, I still think Wes Matthews is a good player. Obviously, Darrell Williams is beyond washed at this point. Harrison Barnes is overpaid, but it's not like he's bad. Andrew Bogut is going to play a lot of solid minutes for them, I think. I think Seth Curry is an under-the-radar good signing.
Seth Curry is better than Raymond Felton.
Yeah, oh, for sure. So, like you were listing off the guys that they got rid of and the guys they added, and I'm listening while you're reading off those lists. I'm like, everybody they added is better than everybody they just got rid of.
David Lee was really good for him. I thought Villanueva was really good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think Bogut can replace what those two added.
Would it be Pacioli? They lost Pacioli. I don't think I mentioned that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Would it be too much of a hot take to think the Pelicans make it back to the playoffs?
They got Anthony Davis.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, but Tim, with you, I'm with you, the Mavs and the Jazz, but I'm just trying to think of other teams that could potentially make the jump back.
If you look at the Jazz, so their depth now at point guard is Hill, Exum, Mack, and Nato. Mm-hmm. Their depth at shooting guard is Hood and Burke. Their depth at small forward is Hayward, Johnson, Joe Ingles. Their depth of power forward is Favors, Lyles, and Boris Diaw. And then they got Rudy Gobert and Whitty at center. Mm-hmm.
Like the Borista.
They're really loaded in the one position that they didn't have last year.
Yeah.
And really, everyone coming off the bench is really solid. Like, this team has a lot of depth.
The shooting guard depth is scares me a little bit because Alec Burks just hasn't really been able to stay healthy ever.
But they can put Ingles at the shooting guard. They can put Joe Johnson at the shooting guard. Like, they have options.
Right. Yeah. And that's the beauty of it, is they have options this year.
They can put Exum at the shooting guard if they really want to, put him small ball.
I don't know if I want Exum playing at the two, but it's definitely, you're able to do that. I think Utah is probably... I don't think they're top four this year, but they've got to be close to five, yeah?
There were people saying they were going to be third.
Yeah, I don't think they will. But, I mean, if you look at them last year, points allowed 95, points scored 97. They were better than the Mavericks. They flamed out at the end of the year. They lost some games that they shouldn't have lost.
And they lost Gobert, like, in that, like, so first few the weeks. Jazz they had that weird, stretch. Yeah.
If you look at strictly point differential, the Jazz would have been fifth last year. I mean, they were ahead of Portland, they were ahead of Houston, they were ahead of both Dallas and Memphis, and they were a significant amount behind the Clippers and the Thunder and the Spurs and the Warriors, but... You know, this was a better team. They just, like you said, they lost a lot of games down the stretch. They lost that Kobe 61-point game, which I don't think it would have mattered at that point.
It didn't matter.
But
they knew they had lost a game. But they knew they weren't getting into the playoffs before they played that game.
The expectations are real for Utah this year. I think they were everybody's Cinderella last year. But I think, like, if Utah doesn't make the playoffs and take the jump next year, like, it has to be considered an abject failure, in my opinion.
Well, and the thing is, they got to win more of their, inter-conference games. They were 24 wins to 28 losses. That right there will bring them back into it.
Well, they now have four point guards. Again, they added George Hill. Mm-hmm. They added Joe Johnson. They added Boris Diaw. I mean, they added solid vets.
Well, Joe Johnson, too, is just someone that, you know, the problem with the Jazz, too, is a lot of times is you haven't had anyone where you've really had to respect their shot beyond Gordon Hayward. Now with Joe Johnson, while he's not the player he once was, you still have to respect his jumper a little bit. I think that's just going to open up so much more.
I can bring that exact argument over to the East and for the Knicks, I think.
All right, so bringing it over to the East. Oh, I guess so. We all agree that the Jazz are in.
Yes.
Both you and I, Justin, picked the Mavericks out, and Kevin picked the Rockets out.
Right. And I said I don't think it's too far-fetched to think the Pelicans could be in that conversation as well.
And I don't think it's too far-fetched to see Dallas out and Houston in.
Right. Yeah.
I could also see Houston out, so we kind of all agree on that. So what do you guys think of the East?
I thought the East was a lot harder because I thought you could make arguments that the Knicks, Magic, and Bulls all could potentially work their way.
And Wizards.
And the Wizards, sorry, all work their way back into the playoffs.
Oh, it was really difficult looking at it. I'm like, if four of the teams that didn't make the playoffs right. last year made it this year, I wouldn't be remotely shocked.
But I think if I had to pick one that's going to be out, would be, and I don't want to because I don't think their team changed too drastically. They did lose some players, but I think the Hornets are maybe out.
Hornets, really.
Maybe it's just because their team's not that like flashy. In my opinion, you know what I mean? Like, they don't have that one, like, real superstar guy. Like, I know they got Walker, but, like, after that,
Kemba played the best ball of his career last year.
Nick Batum. Right. And they re-signed Nick Batum.
Yeah, right. And Batum is great. Like, I don't want to knock Batum at all.
Nick Batum makes Kemba better.
Right. Yeah. And if Kemba goes back you know, takes that step backwards. You can see that being a major fall for them there. They do get Michael Kidd-Gilchrist back, which will be interesting, too, because it was funny. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is one of the best defenders in the league. Look at all the numbers. I don't think anyone can doubt that. But the Hornets were much better with him off the floor last year.
For, like, how many games? What do you play, like, 7 games or something?
But I'm saying with the sample size, going back to the previous season, it seemed like the problem with Kidd-Gilchrist is Kidd-Gilchrist can't shoot. And while he's an excellent defender, he's a bit of a black hole on offense, and it seemed like things just opened up so much more when they didn't have to worry about playing him, when they gave Batum more minutes, for example.
Well, I wonder if they would go try playing Kidd-Gilchrist, like playing him with a really like small ball lineups.
Right. Maybe they do stay in the playoffs, but just in my opinion, if I have to pick one out, I would pick them just because...
Well, and the Hornets...
Or maybe the Pistons, but the Pistons were kind of impressive last year, too.
Yeah, no, Pistons are making it this year.
And the Hornets lost Jeremy Lin. They lost Al Jefferson. These are two... I mean, we mentioned Jeremy Lin. It's a potential sixth man of the year candidate last year. He played a lot of good minutes for them behind Kemba, including in crunch time. Al Jefferson has started to slow a little bit, but he's been a big part of that team's identity for the past few years. So, and I'm not, the East is hard. Like, the East is truly the one that I had the most difficulty with.
So to at least my point of the Knicks making it in the playoffs, I was watching a lot of highlights in some articles that people were writing where they kept showing highlights of Rose driving last year, driving in the lane, and then the, you know, defender that was guarding Paul Gasol would sag off and come in to help, and then he would just pass it to Gasol, and Gasol would have this open jumper. And I'm just thinking, when he does that with the Knicks, he's going to be able to probably either throw that out to Porzingis or to Melo, and Melo wide open for a jumper. He's going to make that like nearly every single time. So that and the scoring pressure isn't on one specific player on the Knicks anymore.
Courtney Lee too. Courtney
yeah, well, no, and Courtney Lee too. That's what. What are they? Courtney 3 or whatever they were joking with his name or something like that. But yeah, but so I think the Knicks themselves have themselves in a spot where yes, there's probably going to be some injuries, but the scoring load's not going to be on Melo. It's not going to be on Rose. There's no like pressure for them to be the scorer, and I think that will go a long way for them.
They did lose Derek Williams, though.
They did lose Derek Williams.
And that's going to hurt. Kevin, who did you pick?
Oh, God, it was so hard. I guess I'm going to put Charlotte out. I also had Atlanta in the conversation, which maybe I'm just overvaluing how much Al Horford meant to that team. But I just think, like, Dwight Howard is a suitable replacement. But I just don't think Dwight Howard is going to be able to help with their ball movement. And I think won't be nearly as good out of the post as I think Al Horford will be, so that's going to be interesting. This was really... Because, I mean, I'm looking at the 1 through 8. I don't think Toronto's going anywhere. I don't think Miami's going anywhere. Miami's another one, though, that
I think they drop a bit, for
Miami
sure.
Is the one I took out, and I took it out because if you look at what Miami lost, they lost Wade, they lost Joe Johnson, they lost Luol Deng, they lost Stoudemire, they lost Gerald Green, they lost Darrell Wright. They did bring in Derek Williams. That's a huge boost. They brought in Wayne Ellington, Luke Babbitt, Deion Waiters, and I really like James Johnson. You're looking at a starting lineup of Dragic, Waiters, Winslow, Bosch, if he's healthy, and Whiteside. I just think you can't lose Dwayne Wade, Joe Johnson, Luol Deng, and still make the playoffs.
Well, and Bosch's health is enough to raise red flags about this team. Like, if Bosch goes down, I don't think there's any question that Miami's the team out. If Bosch is healthy, I'm probably going to go with Charlotte. Again, I really like Detroit's fight last year. I think Indiana got better. I think Boston got better. And I'm going to give Charlotte a little bit of... I mean, I don't know. I guess the caveat is Bosch's health. If Bosch is healthy all season, I think Miami is in, and I think Charlotte drops.
Dude, I just hate Miami's guard depth. Like, I hate it.
You don't like Tyler Johnson?
He's fine. I think that if Deion Waiters is your best shooting guard,
you're in for some trouble. My other question is, so, and this just kind of came into my mind looking at the standings last year. The Cavs were 57-25. The Raptors were 56-26. Do you think the Raptors can be number one in the East next year?
No.
You think the Cavs will still take it?
Yeah.
Just a thought?
I mean, maybe it could be one of those situations where maybe if the Raptors really get going, because there was a season when LeBron was in Miami where Indy finished ahead of Miami in the standings, but like, let's not make any bones about it. Like, Cleveland is still way ahead of everyone in the East. As for my teams that would make it, I'm inclined to say the Wizards. I think not having Randy Whitman as their coach is going to go a long way. I think if Bradley Beal, I'm not betting anything of significance on this, but I think Bradley Beal, if healthy, can really break out. I'm a huge fan of John Wall's game. I think a full season of Markieff Morris, if everything goes well, could be a positive for them. I like the Knicks too. I mean, there are many scenarios where I see the Knicks getting back in, and I like the Bucks. The Bucks,
Kevin, pick one. Well, I'm probably always do this when we do these.
I'm picking the Wizards.
I'm picking the Wizards.
Yeah. All right. I'm just the Knicks' health scares me enough, and the Bucks, I think the Bucks are going to be better. I just think they're going to be one out. I don't think they have enough offense still.
All right. Well, I'm going with Orlando Magic.
I knew you were going to. And I wanted to try to make the argument for it too. I was too scared by the big men.
I'm extremely scared.
Well,
by the
here
big
you
men.
Go. And I'm going to give you my argument. You look at them last year. Points allowed 104. Mm-hmm. Points scored 102. So they don't have to get that much better
on defense.
On defense, really, to make that a positive point differential. Mm-hmm. The Frank Vogel effect. Frank Vogel is a fantastic coach.
Yep.
They brought in Ibaka. They brought in Jeff Green. They brought in DJ Augustine. They brought in Biombo. They brought in Wilcox. They did lose Victor Oladipo, Jason Smith. I don't think it's a loss to lose Brandon Jennings or Ilyasova, considering their replacements. I think that DJ Augustine is better than Brandon Jennings, and I think Ibaka is much better than Ilyasova. You're looking at a starting lineup of Payton, Fournier, Aaron Gordon, Ibaka, and Vucevic. Mm-hmm. And I do think that they have more shooting off the bench from Jeff Green and DJ Augustine and Wilcox. And I do think that they can play some small ball lineups with Ibaka right at the five, and they can stretch the floor that way.
Right. No, and I agree with you. I wanted to make the argument for the Magic. I just think I'm buying into Derrick Rose's super team hype. much as he won't let that go.
Well, the thing is, we had to pick one, right?
Yeah.
So I literally could have looked, and we kind of hit on this already, but I could have looked at four teams that didn't make it last year in the East that made it this year. I could make an argument for the Wizards. I could make an argument for the Bucks. Mm-hmm. I could definitely make an argument for the Knicks. I cannot make one for the Nets.
Dang it. I tried to pull that where you just slide it in there.
No. There's no argument for
Win 20 games next year? They won 21 last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends what they do with Brook Lopez. I think Brook Lopez has gotten to a point where he is so underrated as a player. Like, people just forget of his existence, but the dude is so damn good.
He is. No, I think I had him in fantasy last year, and it's like, you don't realize how good he's doing until, like, he's on your fantasy team. You're like, oh my gosh.
And he's a much better rim protector than people think. The difference with Brook Lopez is he's not blocking shots, so it's not like that flashy, the flashy defensive counting stats that stands out.
Yeah.
But no, he's actually holding the opponents to at the rim is better than Gobert.
Please teach me how to
play basketball.
Gee, let me think. Sure.
The Drive and Dougal.
Wait, what's that?
It's like Google, if it's just the NBA.
So this week on The Drive and Dougal, we want to talk about one of our favorite things, advanced statistics, and specifically one that we reference a bunch in this episode, and that is VORP. So first off, VORP stands for Value Over Replacement Player, and it was first popularized by Keith Woolner, who created the stat for baseball. VORP compares a player to a hypothetical, statistically average player. It's a box score estimate per 100 team possessions that a player contributed above a replacement-level player. Now, the average replacement-level player clocks in at -2 on VORP. It's translated to an average team and then pro rated over an 82-game season. You can then multiply this number by 2.70 to get another advanced stat, WAR, or wins over replacement, which is something we can get into another day. So for some comparison, last year's MVP Stephen Curry led the league in VORP, coming in at 9.81. Historically, the stats started being measured in 1973, with the all-time best season for VORP coming in at 1989, set by Michael Jordan at 11.98. Other greats that have led the statistic at some time, LeBron James, Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, Kevin Durant, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, David Robinson, Julius Erving, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
So I'm a Phoenix Suns fan. Kevin and Justin, they are Philadelphia 76ers fans. None of us live in the cities that we are fans of anymore. We grew up there, but as happens with a lot of people, you end up moving on. One of the hardest things about getting my gear for the Phoenix Suns is the fact that I can't go to a lot of Phoenix Suns games. Sure, I can go to a Magic's game down here in Orlando, but I'm just going to see a bunch of Magic gear there. That's what makes Fan Essentials so amazing. Every month, I get a box of Phoenix Suns gear sent right to my house, and we have the hookup. What you do is you go to fanessentials.net. That's fanessentials.net. You pick the team that you want to sign up for. And each month, and prices start at $14.99, they go up to $35, you get your team's gear sent right to your house. Here's a great thing, too, is you can support the podcast as well as get a 30% off discount by going to fanessentials.net. And at checkout for 30% off, just put in the promo code DRIVEANDDISH. That's fanessentials.net. Promo code Drive and Dish. If you forget, though, just go to driveanddish.com, click on the sponsors tab, all the information's right there for you.
So on to the segment Tim is most excited for.
Oh, whoa. Don't give it all just Tim here. I've low-key been doing this since we posted it on Facebook, and I'm ready to actually do it now.
Okay, well, before we get into redrafting the top 10 of the 2013 draft, I would just like to point out the most win shares from players in that draft. Gobert number one with 16.1, Miles Plumlee with 15.5, and Adetokounmpo at 14.5.
And you know who the number one overall draft pick, you know, Matt, how many win shares he has?
0.0.
Zero. It is literally, I love that on Basketball Reference that that's the first thing it says. Number of picks, 60. 49 played in NBA. First overall pick, Anthony Bennett. 0.0 win shares.
So
0.0. It's not even like 0.1.
Right.
Nothing.
And before we get into the actual draft part of it, I kind of broke it down into like a tier one from the draft class and a tier two. And I guess it kind of gives away where my drafting was, but in tier one, I have it like Noel, Oladipo, Gobert, Adetokounmpo. Those are my four guys that I think are tier ones from there. Mm-hmm. And then the tier twos, I got like Schroeder, Porter, Adams, players like that, where it's like they're good. They're really good role players, but they're not like the, oh my gosh, these guys have star potential, I guess.
I basically went through the 60 picks, and I think I narrowed it down initially to about 17.
Well, let's talk about what actually happened in this draft, right?
Okay. So,
number one overall, Anthony Bennett. Number two, Victor Oladipo. Number three, Otto Porter. Number four, Cody Zeller. Number five, Alex Lynn. Number six, Nerlens Noel. Number seven, Ben McLemore. Number eight, KCP. Number nine, Trey Burke. Number 10, CJ McCollum. This draft right here, I want to talk about the 17 through 27 because that's really interesting to me.
Yep.
Dennis Schroeder at 17, mm-hmm. Shane Larkin at 18, Tony Snell at 20, Gorgui Jang, at 21, Mason Plumlee at 22, Solomon Hill at 23. The Knicks picked Tim Hardaway at 24 and Andre Roberson at 26 and number 27, Rudy Gobert.
You're gonna mention Reggie Bullock? At least mention him. He's 25.
I mean, what did that guy ever do?
But you can't cut it just to pick out.
Wait. And you missed two players that I would like to highlight. At number 31, Alan Crabb.
That's true.
That is true. No, and he was there. And also Archie Goodwin.
Yeah, there's no honorable mention for Archie Goodwin.
Yeah, you're still mad over that Twitter diss.
No, I'm not mad over the Twitter diss. I just think Archie Goodwin is, he never got better at anything he needed to get better at. He's literally the same player as when they drafted him.
The 11 through 15, like, low-key all should have been arguable top 10 picks.
But right.
Again, let's just get right into it. We're gonna redraft this so the order is irrelevant. We'll go to number 10, and before we get this started, we'll just get it out of the way real quick. Is Anthony Bennett the worst number one pick of all time?
Yes, but I just feel bad for him.
Yeah. Like, it's not even like I can harp on the guy. I just feel terrible.
Yeah. Like, I just didn't think anyone would outdo, like, Olu Candy, for example. It was just such a bad number one pick. And where it just didn't pan out at all. And Anthony Bennett was set up to fail from day one because Anthony Bennett, like, everyone who watched that draft was just like, what the hell are the Cavs doing? Like, Anthony Bennett wasn't higher than maybe 8 on anyone's big board. Mm-hmm. And I mean anyone's big board. There wasn't even that fluke scenario where they're like, oh yeah, I could see this guy projected. Like, they just took him and it didn't make sense at the time. So then he went into camp. He was overweight. He just wasn't, and so he struggled out of the gate because he wasn't ready to shoulder the pressures of being the number one pick. Totally flopped. So then he was getting ripped on the internet. I mean, it truly is a tragedy. But will it go down as the worst number one pick? It has to.
Yes.
The guy has zero win shares.
He's not even in the NBA anymore.
I mean, Kwame Brown at least played. Like, Kwame Brown is probably before this the consensus just terrible number one overall pick. But Kwame Brown at least had a few seasons. For as bad as he was, also fun fact, Doug Collins, when he was the Sixers coach, wanted to give Kwame Brown a 4-year deal.
Darko Milicic?
Mm-hmm. He was two.
He was two, not even number one. I thought that was probably the historically like one of the worst draft picks ever.
Well, yeah. it just looks bad because you look at the top five and you go LeBron at one. Okay, obviously you didn't pick number one, so you took Darko. Number three was Melo. Number four was Bosh. Number five was Wade. So it's like you literally could have picked anyone. Could you imagine Melo on those Pistons teams?
Would have been a lot better.
Yeah, a whole lot better. Not that Larry Brown plays rookies, but that's besides the point. That's neither here nor there. We're going to redraft the 2013 draft. We have everybody from this pool of 60 and undrafted players included. We're going to work our way bottom up. We're going to start at number 10. So, Tim, why don't you get us started?
I picked Dennis Schroeder at number 10. If you rank the class, he is fourth in assists, and that is the only thing he's the top 10 in. However, the reason why I put him in here is almost an honorable mention, and he's the only one where I factored in his per 36 numbers, and I'm doing this because he is now the starting point guard for the Atlanta Hawks, which means he's going to be getting those 36 minutes instead of the 20 minutes that he's been averaging, which in theory will put him at 19 points per game and seven assists a game. And I just think if you look at those, given the opportunity he's about to have, I would pick him number 10.
Okay. See, I actually have him a little bit higher, honestly.
He's not top 10 on value over replacement player. He's not top 10 in win shares. He's not top 10 in box plus minus. I actually think he's a negative in box plus minus, and he's also a negative in VORP.
Well, no, because that would be over Teague, right?
No, because value over replacement player, essentially, we just defined this a little bit in the Drive and Dougal, but it's value over average player,
quite literally like the mean of everybody,
and that's
and then
where
build
he
off
okay,
that.
Okay, okay.
So he is worse than your average player on four box plus minus, and he didn't crack the top 10 in win shares.
Okay,
all right. So for me at number 10, I got Otto Porter.
Actually, literally the same thing.
Oh, how about that? Yeah, no, I think Otto Porter went number three in this draft, definitely a little bit too high, but I do think Otto Porter, while you know, we all wanted him to break out after the playoffs that he had 2 years ago, didn't see that quite as much last year, but I do think Otto Porter can still be a really good role player for this Wizards team. You know, true shooting percentage of almost 57%, just a shade under average good numbers, 15 points, and a guy off the bench. You know, when you have John Wall and you have Bradley Beal, who are realistically going to be your stars on that team, I think that Otto Porter can play some really good minutes off the bench for them. I think he's a good energy guy. I think he's a decent defender, and you know, he went a little high at number three, but I, you know, he's a pretty decent rebounder. He averages just under five or over five rebounds a game, I should say. But I'm really high on the true shooting percentage. I'm really high on him being kind of a weapon off the bench for the Wizards going forward. So if we're strictly talking about, you know, talent here, we're not ranking on fit based with the team, then I would have taken Otto Porter at number 10.
Yeah, I actually have Otto Porter too. I will admit I was debating between him and Roberson. So I was bouncing around between those two, but I did end up going with Porter for the exact same reasons. I think he just got picked a little bit too high, and he's going to always be tainted at the moment.
Well, we talked about if he was a bust the other weekend. I mean, I guess he's a bust in the sense that if you took him with a three pick, I don't think he's going to live quite up to that number three pick billing, but I don't think that takes away from the fact that he's a good NBA player. I think in the last two seasons in particular, he's really come into his own a bit, and I think 10 is a good spot for him. I had Roberson. I mean, if we're talking honorable mentions, I didn't have even Roberson in my honorable mentions. He's just such a black hole on offense. As great of a defender as he is, you know, Tim is right, is that the dude is a total black hole on offense. There are guys like, you know, spoiler alert, for example, Kelly Olynyk doesn't crack my top 10, but I would have drafted Olynyk over Roberson.
You are crazy. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to number 9, KCP. For me, anyway, he's 8th in scoring among the class. He is 8th in win shares, and he is 9th in value over replacement player. I just think that is a solid, the 9th best player out of the entire draft.
I actually had your boy Alex Len.
He's not remotely in the top 10 for me. And that's, if I was to talk about potential and where I think he's going to be, that's completely different.
See, so I took that into account with a lot of my picks, is where I think they're going to be, the potential that's behind them. I didn't look in fit for team, like who is picking 9th and if he would have. I didn't look into that. I just looked in at Alex Len, his numbers right now, per 36 numbers, 13.9 points per game. He's at like almost 12 rebounds a game. Almost 1.5 blocks a game. Like, he's developing really well.
Alex Len is hard to judge because his first year he was injured. His second year he was injured. We're talking about like hand injuries. His third year is when they brought in Tyson, and mm-hmm. then so they were starting the Twin Towers lineup, and they were playing Alex Len at the four, and so his shooting percentage went down. Like, he's not a power forward,
right? Right.
He's just like
he's 7-1. Right, he's a freaking center.
Yes, yeah. He's not remotely a power forward, so no. It's really hard to judge him. I do think that what we see from Alex Len this year is
going to be the tell-all.
Yeah.
Okay. For I guess the rest of my picks, also no, I took it into where I think they can be in the future and their potential.
See, the only one I did that with was Dennis Schroeder.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I have Schroeder at 9. And again, much to Tim's point, it's a lot of potential. It's a lot of looking at the per 36 minutes. It's a lot of he's going to have, you know, he's always been behind Teague and he's looked good in those minutes behind Teague. Now he's got the keys to the car. I really think want to see what he can do with it this year. So again, that's more of a potential pick than anything else, but I think his potential is still high enough where I take him number 9 over some other these other guys.
All right, who do you have number 8?
Number 8, and I felt bad about putting him this low. I have Mason Plumlee at number 8. Mm-hmm. Among the class, he is 5th in rebounds. He is 2nd in win shares. He is 3rd in box plus minus, and he is 3rd in value over replacement player.
I actually have CJ McCollum here just for that for that last.
Ooh, there it is. Yeah. CJ McCollum, that's a little low.
No, you know what? I put CJ McCollum higher than I wanted to, and that's where I wanted to put CJ McCollum.
Like, I had to move people around to put CJ McCollum here, but I think this is a good spot for him. You got to take into account that the first 2 years didn't really do much, but that's because he wasn't seeing the minutes. Yeah.
CJ McCollum has a negative VORP and a negative BPM. The only thing he has is the 3rd in scoring and the 11th in win shares.
Right. I think his potential also puts him on this board for me as well. Because of what we've seen from him, we can assume that he's going to build off that and get better and better and be next to Lillard, at least for now.
But as of now, he's a net negative player. He's worse than your average shooting guard.
Fair, but he was their second scoring option, and at least in the box score, he lived up to that potential.
Right. He thrived on that team. I think a lot. When you look at a lot of his numbers, we'll get into this in a bit. It's not. I don't have him at number 8. I actually agree with Tim here. I've got Mason Plumlee at number 8. This one, it was really tough because if you look strictly at the numbers, he's really high on all these charts. I mean, you mentioned he's 2nd in win shares. Win shares per 48, he's right up there as well. I think he's number 4. Got high BPM, high warp. I think with Mason Plumlee, you know what you're getting. You get a decent defender. You get a good rebounder. You get a guy who plays the game with high basketball intelligence. He's always finds himself in the right positions. I think there's no doubt at this point that he's an NBA caliber starting center. And you know, I think he's limited in terms of upside, and that's why I kind of have him here. I think you know what Plumlee is. I think his mechanics are not always the most flashy thing in the world. Plumlee is one of those guys who I think has to fight for everything he gets.
Well, that's true, but in the playoffs, they did start, the Portland Trailblazers start bringing up the ball with Plumlee, mm-hmm. and I do think that more value than what the opportunity he's been given so far.
And he's a really good passer, too, which is, I think, is something. Mm-hmm. They get it to him inside a lot, and he's really good at passing out of the paint and just keeping the ball flow moving. So I think Plumlee is definitely outplayed where he was taken in this draft.
Well, I was going to say, when they started bringing it up, the ball up with Plumlee, that threw everything off. That mm-hmm. was when they started really like confusing the defense and getting really good open looks.
Right. I mean, he can handle. So yeah, that's who I had at 8. So all agree on 8?
No, I had CJ. I actually have Plumlee is my next pick. So we'll just jump into it. Seven is Plumlee for me for all the exact same reasons.
Okay. Plumlee is like it's. That was a good little trade for Portland to get him. They got him on the low.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that the Nets gave him up. Honestly,
yeah, when the Nets need young talent,
right? Number seven, I had Nerlens Noel. He is 7th in scoring among the class. He's 2nd in rebounds. He is 9th in box plus minus, and he is 8th in value over replacement player VORP. I had him at a solid number 7 out of that class.
Got a guy that Tim already mentioned. I've got a Kentavious Caldwell Pope at number 7. I think he's he's had the luxury of he's got a lot of starting minutes in Detroit with a team that we mentioned that's on the rise last year. I think he's a solid shooter. I think he's really quick in terms of his defense. I think he annoys the shit out of his opponents, which I think is something that's really valuable, especially come playoff time. You want that guy that's just gonna, you know, there are roles in the league for guys who can strictly irritate the hell out of somebody. And I like what KCP has been able to. I still think there's some upside there too in terms of his scoring. I think he can continue to go up. So you know, you mentioned a lot of the other arguments for KCP already, so I'm not going to get too much into it. But I've got him at 7.
Number 6, I have Kelly Olynyk. He is 7th in win shares at 10.6. Celtics. He is fifth in box plus minus, and he is seventh in forward value over replacement player. A lot of people are really high on Olynyk. I'm high on Olynyk, not maybe as high as some Boston Celtics fans are, but I think number six overall is really solid.
I'm always so impressed with Olynyk's three-point shooting. Mm-hmm. When he does that, it always makes me happy. I'm like, oh, big man out there shooting the threes.
He can actually do something. I'd love to see him with some more minutes and a more solid role with the Celtics.
Yeah, I actually have a big man too, but I actually have Steven Adams. I have him in there because the things he did for OKC specifically last year was just outrageous, and they were able to battle with the Warriors' small ball lineup, and he was a big part of that because him and Draymond Green were going at it. And I just think from what we saw last year and what he's going to be, I think we will see this level of consistency from him most of his career.
Steven Adams is really damn good.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yeah, I'm actually surprised you got him that low. I have him a bit higher. My pick here, I have Victor Oladipo. I think he's a really good defender.
Ooh, you are low on Victor Oladipo.
Yeah, I am a bit low on Victor Oladipo. I think he's a really good defender. I think that the shooting is still a big-time question mark.
He is first in scoring among the entire class.
Oh, and I think that matters. Like, I think the shooting is definitely an issue. I think the scoring is there. His athleticism is obviously extremely high. I still think the upside is there.
Can we just talk about what Scott Skiles did to Victor Oladipo last year? Like, how high everybody was on Victor Oladipo.
Mean
until they got Scott Skiles, who put him on the bench, and now everyone forgot that he's a good player. This is a Scott Skiles thing. This was not Victor Oladipo.
It could very well be, and I mean, he was pretty good after the All-Star break last year. He was averaging 19 points and almost 4 assists. Like I said, the defense is the big here. He's a guy who can get blocks out of that guard position. He's a guy who I think has the potential to be among the league leader in steals. He's super athletic, and I think him and Westbrook are going to be really fun to watch in that regards. But you know, I don't know. Maybe it was last year. I still think there's a lot of potential there. And because I went back in 2013, I had him going number one. I thought he was the safest pick on the board. And I still think that potential is there. I just want to see him reach it a little more before I project him higher. I think 3 years in, a lot of that potential is untapped. And I think the scoring is there. But it's still, I need to see it translate a little bit more, I guess.
It translates. Scott Skiles, I'm telling you.
Could very well be looking at this next year once he's playing with Billy Donovan now, and it could be a totally different ballgame.
It's going to be dangerous.
Yeah, imagine guarding that backcourt. Hell.
Yeah. But my question to you is, do you think he's going to be one of the ones in fantasy this year that just drops probably lower than he should and would be a great side pick that people are going to regret not taking?
I worry about taking the same reason why I worry about taking pretty much anybody on the Warriors right now. Is I worry about taking players who are playing with somebody else who's so ball dominant.
Right, like you just don't know. But I just don't know
how many touches it's going to get.
Westbrook and Durant, I mean, you would just assume they would kind of similar ball distribution in that aspect.
Yeah, and I think he's going to take I think they're going to stagger a lot of the minutes. I think they're going to play together too, but I think it's sort of going to be like a Portland Trailblazer situation where the Portland Trailblazers, there were literally 0 minutes last year where either CJ McCollum or Lillard were on the floor together or weren't on the floor at some point. So I think it's going to be the same thing when we're talking about OKC, where it's either going to be Westbrook or Oladipo on the floor 100% of the time.
Okay. So who do you have at number five?
Number five, I am going begrudgingly with CJ McCollum, third in scoring, 11th in win shares. And the reason why he is so low, not as low as you had him, is that he is the only player that I have in my top 10 that has a negative warp and a negative box plus minus. He is a below average shooting guard. But talking about potential, what he did last year, the growth, I can't put him any higher than number five.
For me, number five, I actually got the German Rondo. I got Schroeder here, and it's off for the hype that I have for this guy going into next year. I'm so excited to see him play. His true shooting percentage up 51%. Like, I just think he's going to take a massive leap this year, and he's ready to do it, and I'm excited for him. And I think going number five in the draft, he would have lived up to the hype.
Well, he has the opportunity to.
Yeah, or would have had the opportunity to, yes.
This one is one that I think could be a little low, but I put him here. I've got Steven Adams at five. I think he really showed some big-time signs in the playoffs last year. I think Steven Adams looks like a center who has the potential to be an all defense type guy, a guy that you can build your entire defensive system around. And so I think there's a lot of value there. I think there's a little more to be desired on offense, but I think we're starting to see a lot of those results already.
And I wonder how much of that has to do with just how ball dominant the other players were. For OKC,
and that's the thing, is we could see a breakdown here. He's fourth in field goal percentage in terms of win shares. He's in the top 10.
He's number four in win shares at 13.5.
Number four win shares for 48. I clicked on the wrong tab there. But he's eight in win shares for 48. He's fourth overall at win shares. I really am expecting Steven Adams to kind of take the leap next year. Seventh overall in BPM, and in terms of warp, he's at sixth right now. So. But I think his defense alone is worth the price of admission here. I think it's one of those situations where if this guy turns into an all-NBA defender, Oklahoma City's going to come away with a bit of a steal there. It'll be another one of those Presti picks that really can turn into something. Again, I think he's a little limited on what he's ever going to be able to do on the offensive side, but I think he's good in certain situations. So, and again, I think that field goal percentage kind of helps. You know, he's going to be able to finish around the rim. He's obviously not going to be a guy that you ever worry about stepping out and taking it outside of the paint a little bit. But for his defense alone, I think there's value there. And so I went with Steven Adams.
I picked him at number four.
There's your number four pick.
And you just, everything you just said, I completely agree.
I always feel bad when it's like my pick's like the next one. It's just like, ditto.
Yep. Yeah.
So, number four for mine. He should be number one for all of his freaking nicknames. I love these nicknames. The Stifle Tower, the French Rejection, the Gobert Report, Gobzilla.
You have him at number four?
I do. Because I told you, I've explained this already. I have him broken up into tier one and tier two, where he's in tier one, but the moment I have him lower than the other three on my tier one.
But I guess,
one.
Why is he not a tier one player to you?
No, he is a tier one. He's just the last, out of the four, I think
I guess why? Like, I'm really curious about this, because I have Gobert, I mean, spoiler alert, I have Gobert a lot higher.
I guess maybe I just value the offensive side of it. He hasn't really come to fruition on the offensive side. Like, if he could dominate the offensive side and have a little bit of a shot, like, he would be way higher for me. I think I just want to see him develop a little bit more on the offense, and then he will make that jump for me.
I have him higher too, but I'm going to save my arguments for why I have him higher for when I mention him.
Yeah, okay. That's kind of where I'm at as well. So you said you're number four. You just had Steven Adams. Number four,
Justin has Gobert.
Yeah, and number four for me, I got Nerlens Noel. I think Nerlens has been... I guess people, I don't think, realize how good Nerlens is because he's been playing with just the results of the process for the past few years. I mean, when he 2 years ago was playing with competent players, you're talking about a guy who was ringing up 30 points a game on some nights. I think he's an elite defender. I think he can be one of the best rim protectors in the league. I think he is elite in terms of getting steals from the center position, averaging almost two a game. I think he can be among the lead leader in blocks. I think it's shown. I think opponents are only shooting about 40% when he's inside the paint, and he's done a really good job at forcing people to adjust their shots. So it's not just a shot block for the stat thing. He really does force people to adjust. I think the offensive concerns are valid. I think he has hands of stone. I think he doesn't have a jumper beyond maybe 15 feet, and even that's a bit of a reach. I think he's going to be the type of player that probably is more of a Tyson Chandler-esque in the sense that he only is really finishing on dunks and finishing on putbacks and alley-oops and things like that. But I think Nerlens is such an athletic player who brings value in the sense that he can run the floor. I think he can play a little bit of the four. I personally don't like him at the four that much, but you can definitely play him there a little bit if need be. You can have him at the five. And I just think, I mean, I look at Nerlens' stats, and Tim mentioned a lot of them earlier. He's kind of around that 7-8 range in terms of win share, in terms of BPM and all that. But I also just think Nerlens has had easily by far the worst talent around him. I don't really think if you look at these other teams it's close or comparable. So I think that people are, maybe that's a little bit of a homer in me coming out, but I've got Nerlens at four. I really think this dude can be an elite all NBA defender, and I think his offensive game, just because of that, his athleticism is a little bit higher, that's what separated him from Steven Adams with me, because that was a really tough, that was one of the tougher decisions that I made when I was re-ranking this, was splitting these two, because I both think they're really good.
I'm not going to argue with the homer pick. It is what what it is.
Yeah.
I think you brought up good points. I have them lower.
And I will. So, okay. So I'll just say Nerlens is my next one. And the only reason I'm having
him. At number three?
Yes. And the only reason I have him over Gobert, and I know people are going to be freaking out about that.
That is Homer. That's more Homer than Ken.
No, for two guys who both struggle offensively, Noel is there a little more than Gobert at the moment.
Gobert makes a bigger difference.
No, yeah. I think Nerlens can have a Gobert-esque impact eventually, but I just think we've seen Gobert do it already, and that's what the difference
is. But
Gobert
is that also the players around Gobert compared to the players around Noel? Like you said, like that's my other argument to that.
That does make a difference, yes, but I just, Gobert is just a better player.
Okay.
In my humble opinion.
Okay.
Number three, I am going with Victor Oladipo. Kind of mentioned it before, don't want to beat a dying horse. He's first in scoring among the class. He has a positive box plus minus. I think that Skiles stifled his value around the league last year. He moved him to the bench, and I don't think that's a good role for him.
No.
And I'm really high on Victor Oladipo.
Remember, Oladipo was drafted and then immediately was the face of the Magic. Like, that was the hype that was around this guy.
He was good.
And he lived up to it, and then it just, like, died off.
He should have gone number one that draft. Like, if you look back at where we were with the big board in 2013, I'm not talking about what we know now. I'm talking about right then in 2013. I don't think it was even a question in anyone's mind that I thought Oladipo should have gone one. Oladipo was easily the most NBA ready. We saw it in Indiana. It was just that Bennett pick came in and just really threw everything off. And again, Oladipo's potential is still there.
When I met him at Gringos, he was really nice.
Oh,
we knew that story was going to come up.
Of,
I need to take a picture with you, though. Oh, you also had a Phoenix Sun shirt on, so I get it. Like, that's actually it's a G move by Oladipo.
You should have just taken your shirt off and been like, can I get a picture?
Yeah. That's even weirder.
Yeah, but like, at least you had a fighting chance then. But
if a guy came up to you in a Mexican restaurant and said, can you take your shirt off and I'll take a picture with you, it'd be a little like...
No, just take it off before you even approach him. Like,
I'd just
make it like...
Yeah, it's so weird.
I mean, hey, you would have had a picture.
Like, he'd be the only shirtless dude in a Mexican restaurant.
You could Photoshop a shirt on.
That's what you could.
Yeah.
So, wait, number three, who did you guys have?
I've got CJ McCollum. This is where I have him sink in here. And I just think, again, it's about the minutes. And I think he delivered with the minutes last year. His numbers are all down because of the first two seasons. And I think that's why a lot of you guys are so low on him. And I think there are concerns.
I have him number five. I'm not that low on him.
Well, I think in your heart you have him lower, though. I had to force myself
to put him that high.
I mean, but we're talking about the most improved player last year. I think there are concerns.
Arguable.
He is not arguable.
Yes, it is arguable. It was a predetermined most. He was not the most improved player. Gary Harris was.
No, Gary. No, he was. Stop.
Yes,
it.
He was. Speaking he improved
of,
more.
Speaking of, I saw an argument saying that the Denver Nuggets had the best offseason. And I'm just like, I don't...
They literally signed nobody.
Right, yeah. But it's the flexibility. And that's what it's that they didn't panic, and they didn't overpay, and they didn't do something that would have hurt their long-term outlook. Denver's got a great long-term outlook.
But if the best offseason is doing nothing, fine.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better to do nothing than do something.
Fine, but if that makes them the best, I just...
I don't think you got to give it to, like...
It's Golden State. They got Kevin Durant.
Oh, right? Yeah. I forgot about that. How did I forget about that?
No, it's as simple as that. Like, it's Golden State. Like, even if you think all these other... There are plenty of other teams that improved, and we talked about this a few weeks ago. Golden State got the second best player in the league. That, regardless of what happens, you signed a game-changing superstar to add to a team that won 73 games.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to CJ McCollum. There are a little bit of concerns. I mean, I get the... CJ McCollum takes a lot of shots. He takes 18 shots a game. I think there are concerns about that. But you look at his numbers once he got with the minutes, because he was averaging just over 15 minutes a game in 2014 and 2015. He got all the way bumped up to 35, really seized the moment. His field goal percentage jumped by 12 points. His three-point percentage went up by about 1.5 a game, but the percentage went up. It went up from about 40% to about 42%. So again, minor, a little bit things, but these all matters. Effective field goal percentage went up from 51% to 51.7%. His free throw percentage was a significant improvement, and I think that was one of the biggest things, only in terms of percentages. He's still got to get better at getting to the line, which I think is a concern. But the biggest thing for me last year, besides the scoring going up, I mean, you're talking about a guy that went from averaging 7 points to averaging 21 points and given a 15-minute increase. Like, I think that is valuable. I don't think you can fake that number. I also think his assist numbers went up big time. I mean, we're talking about a guy who is averaging one assist per game, who's now averaging well over four assists a game. I think he fits really well with Dame in terms of what they can do in that back. backcourt. They're both guys that need the ball in their hands, but it works for Portland. And I think the flaw to CJ McCollum is that he is a guy that needs the ball in his hands, and I think his age is a little bit of a concern. I mean, he's already 24 years old. A lot of these guys are still a bit younger, and their ceilings are a bit higher. I think you kind of know what CJ McCollum is at this point, but I just think Listen, this was a prove-it guy, kind of the way Schroeder was, and I think he proved it last year, and that's why I've got him at three. Like, we know what we're getting with CJ McCollum.
Okay, well, again, he is the only player in the top 10 with a negative VORP and a negative BPM.
Yeah, you're right.
But the first two seasons.
We can only compare.
Yeah. I know, but I'm saying he didn't have minutes. Like, I can't really
it's not an amount of minutes thing. He is a below-average player, given the statistics. And how many times have you talked about on this podcast advanced statistics?
I do.
And there are hardly better ones in box plus minus and VORP. It's simply comparing the player to a league average player at that position.
But I'm saying, if you look at his win shares, he's number 11 right now, but it's not like he's drastically far any of these guys, and he's had significantly less playing time.
Right,
like
number 11.
With less playing time. Like, he wasn't getting the time of these other guys' minutes where he got it now. How many of those win shares did he get just off last year? Like, the VORP, again, if number 14 on the list, but again, it's all about the minutes to me. And I guess that's why, like, advanced stats are great, but I think this is one of those examples where it doesn't tell the full picture. I think if we look at last season and we cut off the first two seasons where he wasn't playing that much, I think it would be a totally different ball game. I think if that was his rookie season, it would be like we'd be talking about this guy maybe being number one.
Then what's his win shares per 48?
His win shares per 48, number 16.
Right. So why is he number three?
It's beyond the advanced stats sometimes. You have to look at the box score.
Yeah, look at
what
he
did with the team.
Too.
Look at the potential. Look at what he did with Portland last year. Like, you can't tell me he wasn't a big part of that team going forward. And it wasn't just Dame. Like, they needed him in the backcourt. The scoring was there. The assists are going up. Like, I just think it's there. I also just think you're irrationally low on CJ McCollum. you're trying to argue that Gary Harris was a more improved player than CJ McCollum.
He was.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was.
No, he was. No one believes that other than you.
That's not true, actually. You feel free to Google it, but you're on Basketball Reference right now. You have this laptop thing that I don't have in front of me.
iPad.
Oh, right, but I can't really pull it up on an iPad. It's a whole debate about what iPads are actually useful for. but while you are on Basketball Reference, you can actually do the side-by-side comparison of Gary Harris with CJ McCollum. I encourage you to do it now.
Right. I understand that, but what role are they playing? McCollum is such a bigger role. It's much more impactful to Denver than Gary Harris was. We're not talking about, like, incremental improvements. It's got to be, like, on a bigger scale, too.
Right. If you want to look at whether or not CJ McCollum helped get Portland into the playoffs, yes, I absolutely agree with you. If you want to look at every single statistical improvement, Gary Harris improved more. And I wasn't the only one that thought that. A lot of people said it. It was just that CJ McCollum was preordained before the start of the season as the most improved player, and that narrative didn't end. Right. I think he was in the race, but I think that Gary Harris was a more improved player.
But my only argument that I had when we brought up that was the argument we just said.
Right, how far did the team go?
Yeah, how much did it help the immediate team, or was it a, you know, self-improvement, I guess?
Right. Well, it's just incremental. Like, I mean, Gary Harris percentage-wise did improve, but at the end of the day, like, Gary Harris is averaging 12-2. CJ McCollum is averaging 20-4.
Yeah, but it's most improved.
I know, but that's, like, it's the core part of the argument.
What did he do the year before? So you're talking about most improved.
Right, but
all his percentages, his effective field goal, his true shooting percentage, his field goal, his three-point, his free throw, every single stat went up with Gary Harris more than one.
But McCollum did too. It's just Gary Harris had a really bad rookie year, so there was more room for him to improve upon.
And that is most improved.
I will say that is kind of what I did when I joined the swim team when I was younger. My freestyle, I really was bad at swimming. I didn't know how to swim, so my freestyle, which was a lap just there and back, was like almost 2 minutes. By the end of the season, when they had trained me to swim and I was one of the best swimmers on our team, I did that in under a minute. So I just automatically won most improved swimmer of
right,
the year.
Because you went from so terrible so great. He most improved. And we're spending way too much time on CJ McCollum. Let's agree to disagree.
This is going
to
be a Facebook post at some point this week. We got to bring this back up. But anyway, so, all right. Number two.
Number two, I have Giannis. He's third highest in win shares. He's fourth in scoring. You look at the other advanced stats, it's not there. You look at the potential, though. I think that what the Bucks were able to do once they moved him to point guard is they finally figured out how to use this kid.
This is amazing. amazing. Right. Like what they can do with him. Actually, you guys are literally going to do the rest of my job for me because I have Oladipo too. Mm-hmm. And what Tim, literally what you said about Oladipo is the same reason I have it. I took into account that when going into the draft, when he got drafted by the Magic, he was immediately the face of the organization and he lived up to the hype. So I have him number two, and I'll just, Adetokounmpo is my number one. So.
I think a lot of people would have picked him number one.
No, it's tough. Like this to me was the hardest part, was the one and two. As simple as that. I'd Gobert and Giannis were the clear one and two for me if I'm redrafting this. I have Gobert at two, and it's more of, I just think, and I'll get into why I have Giannis number one in a bit, but it's a lot of what Tim said. I think the point guard ability for Giannis has just added such a different depth to his game, and I think there's so much value in today's NBA of being able to play 1 through 5. Again, a lot of it still is potential with Giannis, and so I, with Gobert at number two, I mean, you're talking about a guy who makes a huge impact immediately on defense. I mean, among the league leaders in blocking shots, adjusting shots, at his overall rim protection, what opponents are shooting at the rim when they're going up against him. I mean, we talk about the Jazz's defensive rating, and I mean, they're holding opponents to 96 points a game last year, and so much of that has been the stability that Gobert has provided in that interior. And I go back to the stretch of the year where Gobert was hurt and how badly Utah struggled and how badly they got away from their identity, and just bringing Gobert back into the lineup. I mean, he sets the tone for Utah, and I think there's so much value in that beyond the numbers. But I mean, if you look at the defensive numbers, he's going to be among the league leaders every time. Still a decent offense in terms of defensive statistics, I would say, averaging 9 boards a game. I think there are obviously some flaws. Like most centers, he's not a great free throw shooter. I think offensively, he's a bit limited. He's scoring about 10 points a game, so there's a little bit more to be there. But he's doing it on a good true shooting percentage, so that's always a plus. His true shooting percentage, 58%, though it did drop a little bit. He was actually shooting 63% true shooting percentage the season before. But either way, I mean, Gobert, if he stays healthy, we're talking about a guy, he only played 61 games last year, and I think if he's healthy the whole year, Utah probably makes the playoffs. But, you know, just Google. You know, there are plenty of articles on the defensive brilliance of Rudy Gobert that will break it down a lot better than what I just did. But I think this guy truly is an elite game-changing defender who you build your entire defense around. We earlier talked about Steven Adams and Nerlens Noel and what they could do. I think Rudy Gobert has already done it. And I think he's near his ceiling in that he's already a pretty elite defender. And so I think that's why I don't have him higher than Giannis. But I think if you ask me this question in 2 years and Giannis is still kind of where he is now, that it would probably be Gobert one.
All right. Well, I think that while people are searching for articles about how good Gobert is, they should also search for articles about why Gary Harris should have won Most Improved Player.
Oh, God,
number one. Solomon Hill.
You know, I knew this was coming because he's
not serious.
I knew, but when I saw Solomon Hill in the draft, I was like, Tim, at some point will make a claim that he should be number one.
I'm not gonna
lie, 5.
Solomon Hill did crack my initial list of the 17.
Solomon Hill cracked my list of the top 12, but I couldn't put him in. I have Rudy Gobert, and you look at the class, you compare them. He leads in win shares at like 16 point something. He leads at win shares per 48. So take out all that garbage about not getting enough minutes, because at the very beginning of his his playing time, he wasn't really playing.
Well,
he didn't.
He had cancer ahead of him. Once they traded cancer and put him in,
he still leads in win shares despite that.
It was such a bad fit with. I mean, Cantor is a good player. It's just such a bad fit with Utah, where they needed that defensive guy. Gobert provided that. I mean, Cantor's a good player. He's just not a great defender. I mean, we saw that trade worked out so well. It's one of those rare trades that I feel like worked out for both teams.
He also leads in box plus minus. He also leads in value over replacement player. So to me, he's just a clear number one. And I actually, when I was doing this off of a mental thing, I had Giannis number one. And then I compared the numbers, and I just, there was no way. You're talking the guy that leads in win shares per 48, leads in box plus minus, leads in value over replacement player, and everything Kevin just said. I don't know how you don't take him number one.
It's hard. Like, it was really, really difficult. And like I said, it's strictly a potential thing, because every number you just said is right. You know, Gobert is already, like,
he's number one in everything.
This is the slimmest margin It was really tough. This was essentially a coin flip for me. And again, the reasons that I have Giannis at number one, it goes beyond numbers, unfortunately. It's just a potential thing. I still think Giannis is so raw transitioning from... I mean, you got to understand, when Giannis came into the league, this is a guy who had really just started playing basketball. I just think that 1-5 flexibility is so valuable. I think what Giannis can do in transition, I think the fact that Giannis can run the point now. I mean, when point Giannis became a thing, his assist numbers were high. I think the downside to Giannis is I don't think he's ever going to develop a three-point shot, which is something that you kind of hoped, but it's just really not there. I think he shot 25% from beyond the arc last year.
Well, the theory behind that, and I think that Justin and I have talked about this when we've been playing basketball, is you put the ball in the guy's hand who can't shoot,
right?
Because it forces the defense to defend them regardless.
Right.
And that's the concept behind having Giannis as your point guard, is that it doesn't really matter if he can't shoot because the defense still has to guard him.
Right, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of value to that. I mean, his points have gone up every year. He's averaging about 8 rebounds a game, which for a point guard would be elite. His assist numbers, again, it was 4 for the season last year, but it's something that looks to improve as he plays more point guard. You know, we know Jason Kidd is firmly locked in there now, and I just think the athleticism. I mean, we're talking about a guy that I watched, you know, go from the free throw line to the paint in basically one step. I just think what he can do in transition is so devastating in terms of, and the fact that he can rebound. You know, he's such an elite rebounder at that position. He immediately is one of those guys who can, you know, like Ben Simmons, what his strength is, who can pull the ball, who can get the defensive rebound, turn around and get out and break on the transition and either take it to the rack himself or just open things up. I just think he's such a unique player. And we've talked about the positions really breaking down. And I just think, like, at the end of the day, Rudy Gobert is going to be a center. I think with Giannis, you're so much more flexible in the lineups that you can put on the floor with Giannis. And I think you can really kind of match up against anybody. I think Gobert, you know, if you go small, maybe that does slow Gobert down a little bit. Again, I'm really reaching to try to find slights against Rudy Gobert. I truly think the guy is that great. He's such a key part of this Utah team. This was really, really hard. Like, I'm not even as I say this right now, I'm not like, oh, 100% confident if somebody's putting a gun to my head that I'm taking Giannis over Gobert. But for the sake of this redraft, I'm going with Giannis. It is a potential thing. And in a year or two, it could very well be Gobert in a landslide.
Mm-hmm. Well, so do you guys want to read again, just to remind the listener what the top 10 was?
So what the draft was Anthony Bennett, number 1, Victor Oladipo, 2, Otto Porter, 3, Cody Zeller, 4, Alex Len, 5, Nerlens Noel, 6, Ben McLemore at 7, KCP at 8, Trey Burke at 9, and CJ McCollum at 10.
All right, so let's... guys don't even crack it for me.
I know. Let's go through top 10 again. Start with you, Kevin.
All right, so I had Giannis Antetokounmpo at 1, Rudy Gobert at 2, CJ McCollum at 3, Nerlens Noel at 4, Steven Adams at 5, Victor Oladipo at 6, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at 7, Mason Plumlee at 8, Dennis Schroeder at 9, and Otto Porter at 10.
Justin?
Antetokounmpo 1, Oladipo 2, Noel 3, Gobert 4, hate all you want, Schroeder 5, Steven Adams, Plumlee 7, McCollum 8, Alex Len 9, and Porter 10.
All right, number 1 for me was Rudy Gobert, number 2 was a Greek Freak, number 3, Victor Oladipo, number 4, Steven Adams, number 5, CJ McCollum, number 6, Kelly Olynyk, number 7, Nerlens Noel, number 8, Mason Plumlee, number 9, KCP, and number 10, Dennis Schroeder.
And majority 11, Roberson, right?
No. I mean... Roberson would have been in the top 17.
I think top 15.
Oh, yeah, he made my top 15. Top 15?
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, or, I mean, I didn't, I honestly, look, only, yeah, once yeah. we got, because we knew what we were doing with the top 10.
We didn't look any farther. Yeah, yeah. Once yeah. I got my 10, I was like,
if,
all right.
If I'm it's done. Not in the 10, then I just, yeah. I didn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Can we all agree that, hands down, Giannis Antetokounmpo is easily the most fun to say? Like, I just love saying that dude's name.
I hate it so much, I only call him the Greek Freak.
It flows, though, man. Once you learn how to say it, it's like a revelation, and it flows so well.
Greek Freak is fine. I also say KCP because I don't want to say his name.
That's why I said it, too.
Yep.
I noticed that right away. I'm like, oh, Tim's saying everybody's name. Oh, KCP doesn't want to say Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, does he? Anyways, tweet us your list. Let us know. We posted this on Facebook a few weeks back, but let us know. We are including everybody on Facebook. We had said strictly reorder the players that were in the top 10. So if we did that, obviously Anthony Bennett would be number 10. But we got to include everybody. Tweet us your list at DriveNBA and let us know what you think. Or you can just skewer us.
And that's right. And If you have a chance, make sure you go to driveanddishpodcast.com. Check out our sponsors there. And don't forget, because that tab's at the top right-hand corner, and don't forget to check out the podcast, The Fast Break Breakfast. If you like us, you will definitely like them.
Yes, and hit us up on all things social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Just search Drive-In Dish NBA.
And of course, want to give a shout out to Blog Talk Radio, as always, for hosting this show. If you're fans of the show, again, check out our website, driveanddishpodcast.com. All our episodes are there. Listen to us on iTunes if you're an Apple user. If you are not an Apple user, prefer Android, you can check us out on Google Play Store. We're on Stitcher. We're on Player FM. We're on TuneIn. So if there's a will, there's a way for you to find us.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da 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 da. Hey! Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Hey!
Let's go while we're young.
All right, I think they get the point.